Hello and welcome aboard once again to the USS Henson and to Riser and Shine, your unofficial Star Trek Enterprise podcast. I'm your host Jason, and joining me as always on the bridge is my number one, Michaela.
Hello.
Now, if you'd like to know a little bit more about us and our history with Star Trek, we invite you to go back and check out episode 0, as well as all our previous episodes of Riser and Shine over at anchor.fm, where we've got else Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Google, all the usual spots where you go to get your podcasts, basically. And if you have any comments, questions, or feedback for the show, you can leave them at Riser and Shine on Facebook, or send us an email at riserandshinepodcast@gmail.com.
Yep.
All right, that's all taken care of now. It's time to take your stations as we get into our discussion of Enterprise Season 1, Episode 9, Civilization. Okay, Civilization. Your overall thoughts. What did you think of the episode? Did you like this one?
Yeah.
I think it was better than...
Definitely better than last one. Last one was the worst.
Then last week, yeah. Last week was not that great. Yeah. We decided. And yeah, this one is not the best episode. It's still not better than our favourite one, episode 5, I think. But this one
was good.
Definitely a little bit better. Yeah.
I enjoyed it.
Had good energy, this one. Again, it's all about the energy, right? It wasn't like it was a particularly funny episode. There's a bit of action in this one, but I think the energy was good. There was a mystery and intrigue in this episode, which I think always helps.
And lots of, I think, also moral arguments that you often find in Star Trek, right? You know, whether should you interact with certain civilizations?
Yeah, this episode was a good one to kind of, I guess, address First Contact and the Prime Directive, I guess.
Yeah,
this episode had a little bit of that about it. I mean, it wasn't hammering it, but it was kind of based around that. How much should we say and how much should we not say? How much should we reveal of ourselves? So this was quite interesting. And you do get little hints to where Vulcans and the humans stand in regard to contact.
Yeah.
Because when it first starts the episode... it's a morning briefing. Archer's interested into what they found.
Yeah, what's the news?
At first it was kind of boring, right? They found a cluster of stars or something like that.
Yeah, the first two,
he's like, you know, what else have you got? And then I think Trip says, you know, oh, I found a Minshara class planet, which is an M-class planet, which we know in Star Trek is good news, because that means they can pretty much go down there and, you know, without too much worry about the atmosphere, and they can go down there and breathe happily and normally. So, of course, they want to go down there and explore. But it turns out that when they do a bit more of a scan in the orbit, they discover that there's actually a lot of life signs down there. There's over 500 million people, and they're called the Akali. But what's interesting is they're sort of a pre-industrial civilization, right?
Yeah.
Very much, you know, clipper ships still going about, an agrarian kind of farming society.
I would say maybe a Renaissance style.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, they don't have indoor plumbing. There's a good line that Trump, Trip Tucker mentions about there. They don't have indoor plumbing because what's interesting about the planet as they're scanning, yes, it's kind of this pre-industrial society, but they detect some neutrino emissions, which probably come from some sort of antimatter array machine thing, which didn't quite fit with what else they're finding there. So obviously that piques their interest even more. So they go down there basically to kind of see what's going on and what's happening. I kind of like this setup because it gets into it quite quickly.
And immediately also, again, you have the two sides of T'Pol going by the books.
Yes, that's right.
You know, that was quite interesting to go back.
We were talking earlier about this kind of being one of those First Contact Prime Directive missions. And whereas Tucker and Trip were eager to go down there, T'Pol raises caution by saying, you know, unless a planet has developed warp drive, we don't really want to interfere.
Yeah.
And Archer or Trip, I think he said, well, that's according to your sort
of
protocols.
That's your rule,
not ours.
And she's like, well, maybe you should take our
consideration. Adopt how we sort of see things.
So she's very black and white, you know, as usual, as very Vulcan, very black and white. You either can,
the voice of logic,
or you can't.
The voice of reason.
Yeah.
No matter, it's always, even if she or Vulcan, I assume, would be intrigued or curious about exploring something,
they would,
because of that emotional suppression, it's, they'll immediately think of things, rules first, like reasons not to go and not to do it, as
they
opposed to absorbing the natural joy and the curiosity of exploration to kind of oversee the logical thinking of it.
Yeah, and that Archer's made a very strong argument where he said if Starfleet wanted to just explore without doing anything else, they could have simply sent, you know, a drone or some kind of automated vessel, right?
Yeah, some sort of probe or autonomous sort of technology would go there and maybe just probe and examine or scan from the surface.
But they sent us.
Yeah.
Meaning that we're not only here to chart the stars and the system.
We're seeking out new lives and new civilizations.
But we're also here to, seeking new lives through our senses.
Right.
And he made that, it was a very important point, because obviously this is, I think, what is differentiating a lot humans from Vulcans, is the fact that humans are interpreting what is around them through the five senses, where Vulcans are very much just brain, right?
Yeah. Oh, I mean, they have
they have
their senses and they're aware of them, but they are very much under control.
Exactly.
And
they're
they
not
don't
making
allow
judgment
them,
based on the senses.
Yes, they don't allow them to sort of, not poison, but not sort of infect or affect a decision that they will make that's purely based on a logical reason for doing so.
Yeah.
Whether yes or no, but they don't want an emotion to influence what they think or what they should do.
Whereas us as human, our senses, what we see, we smell, we hear, does affect our emotions.
Yeah, and our choices we make, right?
Yeah. And the choice we make.
Logic is there, but it's not necessarily the first thing that comes to us. It's
like, for example, if I'm looking for a home and I go inside, you know, and they've been showing me houses, like we happened sometimes when in some of the countries we lived, and sometimes you go inside and the place stink, I'm not even interested, you know, that's my decision.
No matter where the location is, logically, it might be in the best location,
the price might be great, you know, everything else. But if I go inside and I start seeing maybe walls are mold or it smells of some funky smell, you know, I'm out.
You're not,
right?
Yeah.
And that's, so senses are so important to us, how we make decisions. And sometimes we don't really think about that.
Yeah. How we synthesize things around us.
They're ingrained, right? Integrated in our decision making system. That's very interesting.
And it's all very fast. Like it's, you know,
blink.
Like if you read sort of Malcolm Gladwell's Blink, I know it's an old book now, so a lot of things have change, or they found
updated
sort of theories and research has kind of changed things, but the underlying sort of thesis of us just kind of making decisions that seem sort of like instinctual, but they're actually based on all these experiences and previous sort of encounters that we've had that are stored in our minds, and then when we're in certain situations, what feels like this called gut sort of instinct is kind of being fueled by these years of experiences that have ingrained in us and that allow us to make these quick sort of calculations quite fast, emotionally based for humans for sure, but then it does filter down to the logic eventually.
Yeah.
Now, when it becomes to that too good to be true, that's when human logic will kick in. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or
I think if or
something's
if you,
not quite right.
Whenever you have to make a decision and there are two very similar situations or products or, you know, things that are so similar, that then you start using the logic, because then you do your pro and cons, right?
Right.
And then you make a conscientious decision on if one is the same as the other, is very similar, then that's when I think the logic really kicks in. But in a general everyday, our senses are super important.
Very important.
So this it's not an argument or anything, but this exchange that they had initially, already again establishes and carries on this relationship of T'Pol, black and white, Archers, we're humans, and we're going to make experiences above all.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah, it's kind of
I mean, of course,
exploration,
within
yes,
moral
within,
boundaries, but we are here.
We're in the protocols of Starfleet
yeah.
and the Federation
yeah.
and of the Vulcan as well, because they're working together. But ultimately, as captain and being a Federation vessel, the primary objective is exploration.
Yeah.
Yeah. To, if possible, once all sort of processes have been followed and decisions have been made and arguments for and against have kind of gone through, ultimately we should be trying to make contact.
Yeah.
If possible. Yeah.
And I must say, I really enjoyed, I thought it was a kind of great acting in that particular scene, because you could see, I even told you, look at it. I mean, it's not like acting, you know, from Oscar winning acting, but just like you could really see the excitement in Trip and Mayweather, and I think Reed might have been there
yeah.
as well, you know, and Archer, and it's basically everyone apart from T'Pol and maybe Sato. Sato wasn't against it, but she's, you know, she's just being Sato self.
Yeah, she wasn't.
She's just
quiet.
She
wasn't against it, no.
But yeah, but it was just nice to see this kind of almost mischievous flair to them, you know,
yeah,
like
just the excitement
ooh,
of Archer
yeah.
and Trip always. The,
what can we get up
yeah.
to this time?
Enthusiasm for them to go off and you know, go on a voyage. That's what it's all about for them. So they're excited to go, and so they do. Yeah, so they get. And speaking of Hoshi, Sato ends in Sato. She
yeah.
she joins them, right? Because
yeah.
when she scans. There's lots of people, you know, 500 million inhabitants down there with an array of different languages and,
yeah.
and tongues. So she's the language and cultural liaison. So she goes down with Trip and T'Pol to come
yeah.
check things out. And, of course, they kind of split off into their groups. So I think Archer and Trip are going to go and detect where this radiation, the emissions from the neutrino emissions are coming from.
Yeah.
And Sato and T'Pol are kind of getting a look. They're sort of the ethnographers.
Anthropologists,
yes. They're kind of checking out the
yeah.
locals and kind of seeing what's going on and
yeah.
how they live and who they are. And they spot immediately that some of them, or quite a few of them actually, have some sort of lesions on their face or some sort of sickness or illness about them, which I think they immediately sort of relate to possibly being
radiation, maybe, or
these
some poisoning.
Emissions
yeah.
that they're reading from their scanners, detectors.
Yeah.
So, so Archer
they
and
go look.
Trip, yeah, they go
yeah.
looking, and they find a door, basically, where behind it seems to be the strongest pulse from these emissions. And before they get a chance to kind of get in there, they get disturbed by a young Akalian lady called Rian.
Yeah.
Yeah, Rian, played by... her name is Diane
Dilascio.
Dilascio.
Is my Italian coming handy?
She finds them and she's, you know, what are you guys up to? What are you doing? Why are you here? And why are you, in particular, I'm interested in this door? So she obviously kind of knows something is going on herself, and
yeah.
she's not affected in any way by the lesions or the disease that seems to be afflicting the locals.
It's funny because our little weapon was funny. It's like some.
It's a crossbow. It's
yeah,
small,
like a hand crossbow,
like a tiny sort of
like a pocket.
Yeah,
pocket
sort of crossbow.
Remind me of Joffrey.
Yeah, no, it wasn't Joffrey size crossbow. It was a mini version of it.
Pocket one.
And these guys, I mean, they have their phases, but I guess they're human. They don't, you know, they're not going to do anything.
Yeah.
They're not going to bring them out. And of course, they're undercover, right? They don't want to, because they actually, that's another thing to mention, before they go down, they kind of disguise themselves a little bit
yeah.
to look like the Akali. So, yeah, they don't want to immediately kind of spew who they are and what they're doing there. They're trying to, you know, keep it undercover, keep it cool, pretend. I think they pretend that they're antique collectors, because where they find this strong reading from the scanners, it's an antique shop.
Yeah.
Antique shop, which isn't open at the time. And all of a sudden, from behind, a phaser goes off and hits this Rian lady, and we see T'Pol
Standard.
T'Pol standing behind her, so she just stunned her with the phaser. Which made Archer like,
Yes, can we try not to go around shooting people?
Stunning people.
Is that she was armed.
Yeah.
Again, logical.
Protocol. Which is fair enough, you know, she doesn't know what's going on. She just knows that her crew could be in danger. Someone's got a weapon and she doesn't know what's...
The funny thing is, because she always follows the rules, she's never really wrong if you think about
it. To be fair, she's got... Every time, she's justified in pretty much every case.
Yeah.
And if it did go to some sort of court-martial tribunal...
Yeah, she'll be
She would be on... You know, she'd be fairly...
Doing well.
Okay, yeah. So, yeah, so she takes her out, and then they go and take the woman back to... they find out who she is. And where she lives from her ID, and so they go and take her back to her shop, I think. And she's turns out she's an
apothecary,
like a pharmacist basically. So I guess that's the reason why she's being careful about not being infected, because she's actually incredibly smart. They find out that she's been contact tracing basically what's been happening and where she thinks
she'd do well during COVID.
She'd be very useful now because she's contact tracing, she's been sampling soil and water, so she's definitely find that there's something. She first thought it was airborne, but then after her sampling and contact tracing, she discovers that it's something maybe possibly in the water, possibly getting to the food. So that was quite interesting. And T'Pol is, while kind of Trip is, sorry, Tucker's finding out this information, T'Pol is kind of taking little bits and pieces, little bits of data from this woman's pharmacy.
It's not Tucker, it's
T'Pol.
No, but you said that while Tucker Archer is talking to...
I corrected, Archer is talking to her.
Yeah.
T'Pol is getting bits of information.
That's right, yeah.
And she's kind of taking bits of data, reading sort of her plans and taking little samples so that she can go back to the ship and have Phlox examine.
Yeah.
And
he's very impressed when he does.
He is, he is impressed because... from the pictures that T'Pol was taking, he can see how much work that Rihanna's done.
Yeah.
And he thought it was quite advanced considering this...
Considering the civilization.
Pre-industrial civilization. Yeah. Her techniques were quite refined.
Yeah.
So
he says, has she been born on Earth or Vulcan?
She'd be a fine physician. Yeah. So it's quite interesting.
So it's nice for him to see also he's probably had less than genuine, professional respect, right?
He was quite appreciative of what she'd done and had come to so far, and she wasn't far off figuring out what was going on. I think she'd been researching for like 14 months or something like that, so quite a while, but a lot quicker than you'd expect considering the tools at her disposal, and probably being the only scientifically intelligent person on the planet.
She'd done quite well. Yeah, there's no computers whatsoever for her to figure out molecules and
anything, sort of Bunsen burners and test tubes.
It's interesting because when Archer and T'Pol are there, she's doing all this funneling around with drops and all her kit or chemical kit and stuff like this, that you're thinking that she's making some crazy experiment or some crazy research, and then in the end she's just making tea.
Because as they're basically as they're discussing what could be the situation, Rihanna and Archer, she's doing something sort of... You think she's kind of maybe creating some sort of potion, maybe, or she's making some sort of experiment of some kind.
And
she's
weird,
dropping all these.
She's got the funnel
powders,
and
she's got some liquid boiling on a little open Bunsen burner flame type thing, and she's asking Archer to help her out while she's doing things. And this is when T'Pol is kind of going around and gathering her data. And it turns out she was making tea all along. That was quite fun. And it's another clever way of dishing out exposition. So as you know, through each episode, we've been kind of tracking how the writers deliver information that's important to the plot.
Right.
Without it being so sort of droll
obvious.
And sort of, so it's just someone just spewing vomiting all this kind of plot information out. And this was quite interesting, that she was doing something that we don't know, but she's actively doing something, and something quite interesting. And it turns out it was tea.
Yeah.
But during that time, we discovered that she's been doing all this contact tracing. She's figured out it wasn't an airborne disease, that it's something maybe in the water or the soil.
Mm-hmm. When it happened.
When it happened. And we discovered that the shop that Trip and Archer had been investigating, this antique shop, she was right. It's all kind of coming from there. Yeah. And apparently it started when a man called Garros, who owns the shop, when he originally arrived on the planet.
Yeah, like a month later. So it was obvious that
all these things started to happen. So she had included that, if anything, something is something to do with him. And Garros, who's a Malurian, he claims to be... Oh, he's played, by the way, by Wade Williams.
Right, yes.
From...
Very young.
Yes, a younger, hair-pieced, toupee-ed Wade Williams, who played the prison guard in...
Prison Break.
Yeah. Played prison guard in Prison Break. So, and he isn't an Akali. So it's quite interesting, because when Archer and Trip kind of go into the shop, they're kind of looking around, posing as antique dealers.
Yeah, but they don't recognize...
They don't really know any of these antiques that he's talking about. And Archer, I think he's subtly sort of scanning the shop, and he reads the biosigns of Garros, and he knows that he's not an Akali, but also Garros knows that they're not Akali or locals or anywhere nearby either, because he's scanning them. So that was quite an interesting sort of... it's almost like two dogs in the street, right?
Yeah, smelling each other.
Smelling each other, freaking each other out. So Garros, he basically explains that, you know, he's an explorer, just like these guys, like the crew, like Archer and Trip. And he found Akali, and he grew to like the people, so he chose to stay, basically. And this antimatter reactor that they're concerned about is nothing more than a machine to create...
Like a replicator, basically.
Almost like a replicator for fabricating food.
Food and clothing
basically. And that, he knows about Rian and her sort of theories that he's got something to do with what's making the people sick. But he says the plague is probably some indigenous virus that has been around before he came, basically. So it's got nothing to do with him. But of course, Archer's skeptical about that because everything's pointing to something in and around the shop to be the cause of this pandemic that's happening.
So they ask to view the generator anyway, the reactor, sorry, anyway, but as they ask that, another customer comes in.
And he kind of gets a moment to kind of, look, I'm busy.
Yeah.
You guys go away, let me deal with this. Maybe we can catch up later or something. What was that? They don't get their moment to kind of dig any further into that situation. But it turns out, actually, when we go back to Dr. Phlox, when he was checking the samples from T'Pol, he discovers that it's a tetracyanate 622, I think it's called, which is a toxic industrial lubricant used in manufacturing. But it's very poisonous, so it's very likely that it's the reason...
The causing agent,
The cause between this making people sick, because it's...
Yeah.
Looks like it's gone into the soil and into the water. So now they kind of put in a few things together. It seems like Garros is in some way involved with this...
He's implicating something.
With these emissions happening and the sickness of the pandemic with the plague. But obviously they didn't get a chance to dig any further. So they're going to wait until the shop closes again to go and check out what's happening, because I think Rian mentions to Archer when they're having their conversation while she's making tea that when I've been looking at that shop and kind of staking it out, I've been noticing
crates every night
are waiting outside the shop, and someone comes along and takes those crates away, and
they never come back.
They just disappear into the city. So she's curious to know about what these crates are.
So in effect, the night that she discovered Trip and Archer, she was watching the shop to figure out where this crater gone, because I think she wanted to follow them.
But, that's right.
They broke into the shop. So
that's right.
And obviously, then things went a different way. So she still doesn't know where this crates are going,
where these crates are going,
being
yeah.
done with them.
What's been done with them? Why is this all happening at night? Yeah, you're right. So that's exactly when she first met Tucker and Trip.
Yeah,
it was at night. So
she far, at this point of the story, I was thinking, oh, we got crates. They've been taken away from the shop. We got talks of this substance that is polluting. I was thinking we had a situation where they were probably gonna go and drop this, the leftovers or whatever they produced into the water stream.
Oh, right.
I thought it was something, those crates.
So you thought whatever this compound was, some sort of pollution, some sort of sludge, which was a residue. Patina from whatever someone else is doing.
They were dumping it at
night into the river or whatever.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
But
I was wrong.
You were close though. It's kind of like that in a way. So basically, yeah. So Archer was like, okay, cool. So something's happening at night. Let's wait until night. Hmm. We'll see what's going to go on. What's happening? So they go and find a little spot and they begin to kind of stake out. A little clearing when they follow. So basically someone comes to pick up the crates and they follow this guy off to wherever he's going to go to see what happens. And this is where, so Rian, excuse me, Rian and Tucker are watching what's happening. And this is where, this is the kind of the best sort of, what is the best scene?
They must have heard me from the comments I made on the last episode.
This is the best scene of the episode. Not because of anything in particular. I mean, it's just kind of a normal scene. I mean, it's got an important plot point as to what's happening with the crates.
Yeah.
But for us, it answers a couple of questions that we had from last week. So the first one was we were comparing the relationship between Trip Tucker and Archer with Picard and Riker in terms of their charm and magnetism and the amorous side.
Yeah.
Of their personas.
Yeah.
And we originally said, you know, Trip, he seems to be the kind of the Riker kind of guy, but Archer definitely didn't have much going about him. He's very much a Boy Scout. I call him the Boy Scout of the bridge. That's what I call him. He's the Boy Scout of the bridge.
Yes.
Even though, you know, Picard is a very well respected captain and an amazing diplomat, but we saw him a few times, you know, he's got skills.
Yeah.
And a lot of women, they like their Picard, right?
Yeah. He's the typical
he could let loose, right?
Yeah.
Where, you know, and Riker was the complete John Wayne. So
yeah.
And we didn't really see much of this with Archer.
With Archer so far.
And Boy Scout.
Was this episode 9?
This is episode 9.
Right, so
yeah.
It's quite.
And normally, because like we were saying, normally for our staff, fleet captains, they're, you know, they like to explore.
Establish, fully explore
what's around them.
Yeah.
And so we had this moment where they're Rian and Archer are doing their stakeout and kind of figuring out what's going to happen. And there's a moment which answers our second question. So, you know, we've been trying to figure out how are people understanding each other. We couldn't figure out what was going on. We knew that the translator was working on the ship.
Yeah.
And as far as we knew, there was one because Hoshi does all the language. And we couldn't figure out how it was working when they went off ship because we didn't. As far as we know, didn't really see an episode where she clearly explained how it would work when they're exploring outside of the vessel. So now we find out it is in the communicator. The normal communicator has the chip or the program that runs the translator.
Mm-hmm.
So that solved that mystery. So I was like, yes, okay, we understand it now. I'm assuming they must have an earpiece.
Yeah, it
in
has
their
to
ear
be now at this
so that
point.
They can hear. It still doesn't answer. So when I understand when one of the crew is speaking, the translator's picking up the other person's language and translating in their ear. But when Archer's speaking, we obviously hear English.
Yeah.
What is the other person hearing?
Yeah, because they don't have
where they're hearing it.
Yeah.
Is the translator? It still doesn't make sense, right? So, but anyway, at least part of that's been answered. And then it answered your question. So this translator, now we found out, is in a communicator. It malfunctions.
Yeah.
So when Archer asks Rian a question about, you know, what she expects to see or how did she find out what's going on, etc., she speaks in her language, in Akali. And obviously, he doesn't understand.
He doesn't understand.
Yeah.
And he's still in a situation where he hasn't told her the truth, you know.
That's
right. As far as
she's concerned, he's an antique investigator.
Yes,
kind of like
but
Bergerac.
He's an Akali ultimately, right?
Yeah, she still thinks he's an Akali, and not this future space guy. So
he basically has to reboot the communicator without her realizing.
He realizes that the translator in the communicator is not working, so he has to fix it. But without her realizing, to kind of break his cover. And when she speaks again in Akali, he
just kisses
just
her.
I'm not sure that's Starfleet protocol, but yeah, he in this day and age, it wouldn't work, right?
Yeah.
But he just grabs her and kisses her. And while he's kissing her, he's trying to fix the translator behind her back. Doesn't work first time. Kind of pulls away, and she's like, "What's kind of going on?" But I guess she's not, you know, flustered by it in any way, because there's obviously some chemistry between them. She speaks again in Akali, and he has to go back in for another kiss, I guess, and fix the translator, which he eventually does. So that answered two of our questions. One, the Boy Scout is
he's got some moves, maybe.
Yeah. He found something he was, you know, he liked and he respected and he was interested in, and I guess she felt the same way. There was some reciprocity.
There was definitely there. I mean, even from before into the episodes, there was definitely some, you know, she's beautiful anyway.
Rianne,
yes. The luscious, she's got that kind of Mediterranean Italian, you know, look
features,
about her features,
look about
yeah.
Her, yeah.
So there was immediately attraction from the moment that they meet, you know, back in the shop,
number one. I remember when T'Pol picked up on that as well.
I was about to say.
When she was collecting all her information, she said, "Can I speak to you, Archer?" And she said, "Look, I need to get back to the ship to kind of immediately investigate what's going on. So it's probably going to tell us what's causing this pandemic."
Yeah.
And he's like, "Okay, cool. I'll stay here and try to find out."
He says,
"I'll try to find out some more information." And she's like, "But don't you want to come up here?" And he's like, no, let me stay here. You do your thing. I'll do my thing here." And T'Pol says, "Oh, okay. Enjoy your tea." But she immediately picked up the chemistry between the two of them.
There was definitely things going on. So it wasn't like, I mean, the kiss was a huge surprise in the sense, but it was still a huge surprise.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of feel something was happening, but in terms of his character that we've seen so far...
He wouldn't expect it from him.
Yeah, the Boy Scout kind of melted a little bit, and he kind of showed, you know, the other side of him, the caring, sort of open and emotional side of him. So that was nice. Yeah, that was a nice little moment. So he fixes the translator, and they discover where these crates are going, the mystery of where these crates are disappearing. So it didn't happen to be toxic waste dumping like we thought, but something even more interesting: someone was beaming up these crates into a ship somewhere. We see this kind of green light just sort of appear, and the crates sort of beam up,
tractor beam,
which freaks out Rianne because she's never seen anything like that.
Yeah.
Of course, obviously.
And by the way, at this point, it seems like humans are the only people that don't have a tractor beam.
Yes. Federation haven't developed this.
Exactly.
Yeah, there's no grappling hook. It was
now,
another tractor
beam.
We find another species that has better technology than the Federation, at least in this Enterprise ship. That freaks out Rianne, because she's never seen anything like that. And of course, Archer has. And he's about to confess to her who he is and what's kind of going on, but then they get attacked. They're attacked by the pickup guy, the bagman, basically, who was delivering these crates. They get into a pistol phaser shootout. Eventually Archer overpowers him, and plot twist, turns out that, because he looks human, but it turns out in the fight a bit of his skin kind of
comes off,
flaps off, and then when he peels it back, there's a scaly alien
like a lizard
prosthetic thing underneath. So V, basically, if any of you guys remember V from the 80s, it was a V storyline here. So it looks human on the outside, but underneath it was a scaly alien, which I'm assuming it's one of the Malarians that Garrus was in the shop. I'm not sure, because he never reveals himself underneath. But this guy, he was an alien underneath his human prosthetic skin.
Mm.
So that was interesting. So it kind of reveals, that thickened the plot a little bit as to these guys want this something else other than they're using this emissions that the neutron emissions that are coming from
the reactor.
Turns out it was powering some sort of drill. They've been mining,
yeah,
basically.
They've been mining the ground. Right?
They've been mining the ground for some viridium, like an isotope, yeah, which can be used to manufacture explosives in, yeah, weapons, basically.
Yeah.
And the drill bits that they've been using were soaked in this tetracyanate-622,
yeah,
which Phlox found. So, yes, that was clearly the Typhoid Mary. The source,
the culprit, yeah.
Yeah, the source of the poison, basically, and the toxicity in the water and the soil. So, mystery solved. They find out what's happening. So Archer tells Tucker to use a transporter beam to kind of get the reactor out of there to stop this going on. they go back to the shop, basically. And they want to shut everything down. There's a dampening field that's around the reactor to kind of protect it from any sort of people trying to get at it. Archer tells Tripp to kind of beam it out of there. And while Rian and Archer try to figure out how to turn down the dampening field, they kind of lock themselves inside this room.
Yeah.
And they get trapped inside this room. And Garrosh appears, basically, and says, "You guys need to leave now. And I've got a ship up in orbit, and it's going to attack
the Enterprise, yeah,
basically." So it's we like watching all the ships, and this is a pretty cool ship, actually. So it's a big bastard as well.
There's a bit of Star Warring going on.
Yeah, as usual, they have they give the Enterprise a little taste of their weaponry.
Mm.
So they fire a missile and it kind of rocks the ship. Enterprise fires back and does nothing, basically.
Yeah.
These guys have superior shields and defenses, so they're in a bit of a...
Maybe instead of the tractor beam, they should borrow learn some
instead of a grappling
shields,
hook, they really should have figured out some better weapons. But
shields,
it is
that's never, even later on.
It is an exploration vessel, but yeah, later on you can see the improvements overall. Because even though you're exploring, you're probably going to come up against hostile forces or enemies,
exactly,
or people.
But
that,
even the Enterprise, the actual one from Next Gen, they still have some rubbish.
No, they have decent weapons on Next Gen.
No, they have decent.
They do.
No, they do
the
have decent
torpedoes.
No, they do.
Boss.
But
yeah,
I'm talking about the shields. The shields
could
drop very quickly. All
right,
the time.
It depends on.
They take off 30% of the time.
It depends on.
Three hits, you're gone.
It depends on who they get attacked by, right? Because it's for the plot of the story, like, yeah. But whenever they need to amp up the drama,
there's
it happens
shields.
To be 30% shields.
Yeah.
And meet from one hit.
Yeah, from one hit, 30% gone.
Shields, 30%. You're like, oh, here we go.
Yeah.
So, they need to definitely improve the technology in Federation. Even if it's exploration-class vessels, they need to improve that. Yeah, because a lot of the time they get hit 30%, 40%, and
in
they're
fact,
panicking.
Exactly.
Yellow
in
alert
fact,
and then red alert,
yeah,
like that.
Exactly. In fact, it should be even higher on exploration because you never know who you're going to meet. You
never know who you're going to piss off.
Exactly.
Like, right?
you don't know because you're going to explore in unknown areas of the quadrants. So.
Yeah, you never know. So, and half the time, and you would
who's
think
been projecting this ship?
They would learn because from all the logs that they make towards the end of the episode, and they're kind of explaining the situations about what's happening, the antagonist that they've apprehended or they've met, and the damage that they've suffered and what have you. You would have thought that they would be improving the technology of the ship, but anyway, yeah, that's probably another episode we can do there actually. So Garrosh and Archer, they're playing sort of chicken. Who's gonna blink first? Garrosh is saying, you know, we're gonna keep on doing drilling at this planet. We may even destroy it, but you need to get out of here. Basically, I'll let you go and the woman go. And a few people might die on this planet, but you know, what's that? It's gonna be nothing compared to, you know, if we take out everybody here. So just let us do what we're doing. We'll be on our way, and we let you go. But obviously, Archer's not. He doesn't want that. You know, he's saying no. So he eventually managed to disable the dampening field, and he escapes with Rian, into the city. And I think later on they get into a massive sort of phaser and pistol fight.
Yeah.
And amongst all the locals as well. So remember, they're still this sort of farmer society, pre-industrial, agrarian sort of thing, and they've never seen anything like that. And all of a sudden, in the town square, there's phasers going off left and right.
There was no one around, was there?
Yeah, there was a few at the beginning. You see them, okay, and then they split because they kind of see what's happening and they're confused and they kind of run off in fear.
Yeah.
The sort of locals, they kind of get shocked. But we still had the issue of the Malurian ship and the Enterprise. They're kind of head-to-head here, but there's no chance that the Enterprise can affect the ship with those shields that they have. And then Trip has a great idea. He manages to beam out the reactor from the planet
into space
and kind of drop it towards near the Malurian ship.
Mm.
And then the Enterprise fires
a torpedo yeah.
That's right, which kind of creates an antimatter explosion, and that disables the shields, which kind of makes them vulnerable. Yeah, yeah. That's a good idea. So now it's even, basically. Mm. No one, whoever fires now, they're both going to end up losing. So now they're kind of on even footing. And I think back on the ground, the fight out, the shootout is happening, and then Rian, she kind of uses her scientific skills to... the classic trope in these things where they shoot the volatile explosive liquid or barrel or something.
It's quite interesting that she uses the specific, she says that there is an oil lamp above their head
at 300 and something degrees.
You don't happen to have something anything like that
I guess that hot. Yeah, and of course he's got his phaser and does the adjust
the temperature, the setting.
The probably to kill. sets the phaser to kill, probably. He heats up this oil lamp structure, which is kind of near Garrosh and his goons. It blows up, kind of knocks them on their ass onto the ground. And I guess it's kind of a checkmate, stalemate, basically.
Yeah.
What do you call it in Italian? Scaccomatto.
Yeah.
In Italian, yeah.
Scaccomatto, yeah.
Yeah. So they basically, like, at an impasse, basically, both the ships are, what do you want to do? Who's going to blink first? And they don't have their reactor there anymore since it's been destroyed. So Archer's like, look, you guys just leave. Don't come back and... be gone. So they say, okay, cool, we lost this time. And Garrosh and his boys, they beam out and they leave the planet. I think that was about it, right?
Yeah. And then Archer shares one last kiss.
Yes. So after that, basically the episode wraps up with the Malurians, they've gone, they leave. And Dr. Phlox, he synthesizes a antidote which he gives to Archer to give to Rian, and they make everybody feel better. He kind of questions, what's going to happen, because the Akali saw, this kind of futuristic fight happening, and they kind of write that off very sort of like, he basically says, what are we going to do about what they saw? Because there's going to be a lot of questions, right?
They should have had one of those things from Men in Black.
The Men in Black. Was it the neutralizer or the neuralizer? Yeah. And she says, look, no one really saw what was going on. Everyone ran before it kind of got to where it got to. And I doubt if anyone's going to believe me if I try to explain to them anyway.
Yeah.
So it's a bit of a cop-out kind of ending. Because it'd be kind of interesting to know, what would happen? These people saw technology way more advanced than what they're used to seeing. So there would have been a lot of questions, and they always worry about this kind of contact causing their natural path of progression to go off the rails.
Yeah.
So they kind of write it off with a line like that, which I guess it's just to kind of tie it up a little bit neatly. They just say, don't worry, no one's going to believe me anyway. So it kind of peters out a little bit.
Probably would be true though.
I guess so. Yeah, but. So. Interesting. I mean, I guess those kind of societies where, I guess, religion and cults and kind of belief systems are quite prevalent and quite influential, it would be interesting how someone watching that may create something.
Some god.
Some god later on, that some turned out god. To be some a religion later that, who knows.
But there was an episode of Star Trek like that, right? In some other series.
I think so, yeah.
Where basically it was just with people.
Wasn't it an Next Gen one where?
Yeah, they went somewhere and.
The crew were the descendants of some. They were, Yeah, they thought of them as gods. Oh yeah, that was that one.
Yeah.
There was that one. I think it is Next Gen.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I think it was Next Gen. Yeah, when O'Brien stays down there because it was this... Yeah, they thought they were gods or something like that. And he was the... almost like the Dalai Lama. He was the reincarnation of some other one. That was it, yeah, because their technology was so advanced, so he must have thought he was his god. And the village, the locals were very much... He had to stop some sort of... some sort of natural event and destroying their village or their crops or something. Yeah, I remember that was a good one. So yeah, it was similar to that in that sense. Maybe something like that would happen if someone had witnessed this phaser fight happening and people beaming up into space. It's like this. There would be an excuse to create this atheistic belief. So yeah, but they eventually kind of cancel that by just saying, yeah, no one's going to believe it. Don't worry about it. Peace out. Give me a kiss. Yeah. So they kiss and.
Live happily ever after.
Archer goes back to trekking, and Rian goes back to, I guess, being the medicine woman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The healer,
yeah. So that was it. That was episode 9, Civilization, directed by Michael Veja, or Veja, I'm not sure. But he's a veteran of Star Trek episodes, and written by Michael Sussman and Phyllis Strong. But was it a strong episode? What do you think?
All right, well, I think we should
give it a rating now.
Yeah,
so we have the 1 to 5 pips rating here on Riser and Shine, which is basically from ensign to admiral. 1 pip is ensign, lieutenant 2 pips, commander 3 pips, etc., etc. So what do you give this episode?
I give it a 3, a solid 3.
3?
Yeah,
3 pips.
You know my rule, if you're off the ship, you get extra points.
It's already got a pip, just by getting off the ship. No Porthos in this episode again.
No Porthos
watch. I would give this... I'm stuck between 2 and 3. I think I'm going to give it 2 pips.
Okay.
Yeah. It's close to a 3, but not quite. I think the ending, the cop-out ending, it lost a point.
Dropped
there.
It, yeah.
They could have left it in a way that... hints at a possible change in the life of the planet. I'm not saying they had to film a complete scene, but maybe that line of dialogue could have been a lot more interesting in the scenario that they leave the planet, that someone witnessed this thing and now is causing people to believe that there's some gods or something. You know, something that kind of hints to a possible different future than one that they were already heading to.
Right.
I think that might have been a more interesting ending, and I probably would have given it a commander 3 pips then. But that ending was a little bit too neat, too tidy, and too much of a cop out. So I'll give it the 2 pips.
Okay.
2 pips there. Episode MVP, I'm going for Scott.
Yeah.
Scott Bakula for Archer. Yeah. Yeah. He had he was good. And it's kind of his episode, this one. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was kind of his episode from the beginning. So yeah, Archer definitely episode MVP for the translator, for getting his kiss on.
Yeah.
And saving the day, that was good. I'll definitely give it to Archer. And he also gets the best line of the show, for me as well, when they first arrive on the planet and they're following the emissions to the Garrus's antique shop. And he tells Trip that, well, we're here, but we can't get behind. What we want to see is behind this door, which is locked, this big metal door. So, and Trip produces his technology to kind of break in. And Archer says to him, you know, 78 light years to get here. Our first act is breaking and entering.
Yeah.
Which is a great line. And I think Trip says after something like, I hope you're not thinking about putting that in your log.
Yeah, just leave it out.
Just leave that bit out. So yeah, first contact turns out to be breaking and entering, which was pretty good. So that was a good little line. But yeah. That was the episode. It's okay.
Yeah, at least it was an improvement on the last one. I mean, you can't get worse than the last one. So anyway,
definitely an improvement on the last one. It was a mission of the week episode. Still no
overall storyline.
Yeah, like we haven't gone back to the suit. So we opened with Broken Bow, double pilot with the Suliban alien species, and that seemed quite interesting with the Klingons and what's happening there. And we're 9 episodes in now, and we've not gone back to them or been introduced to any other big bad for the season.
Yeah.
So we're almost halfway through and still no antagonist, villain, bad guy that's really going to give us some trouble here. You know, something for them to really worry about and to keep them on their toes. So we're still missing that. It was a fine episode. It's fine. But yeah, we need something now. We get it. We kind of figured out who's who. We kind of know the ship. We kind of know the characters and what they can do, what they can't do. We understand the technology that they have. So now we need to really test them. I think we need to give them a real test and kind of truly see what they're made of. What's Arch like under real pressure? Is Trip as charming as he is when he's under pressure? You know, will we see some emotion from T'Pol? Will she break?
Yeah.
We really want something to test them.
And also, next I'd like to see...
Even if it's from Federation, what if some orders come? You know, sometimes when they want to do something and the Admiral from... You know, next gen, Admiral comes in and says, no, you can't do this, you can't do that. Or we made a pact with the supposed enemy. Yeah, you've got to play by these rules now. And it kind of tests them on that level. So we've not even had something that's come from, say, Vulcan High Command or Federation, where they wanted to do something, but then they have to go against their gut and the situation in front of them to appease some sort of
bureaucratic
guy in a suit somewhere else.
So far, it just... and again, we're...
Spinning their wheels, or spinning their warp drive.
Yeah, they're just spinning the wheels without any goal or any aim.
Yes.
Because if you think about it, if you compare to other Star Trek series, say that creating the same years, like you got the Next Gen, Voyager, and Deep Space Nine. By episode 9 or 10, it's well established what's the situation, the overall situation. You know, you know, for example, Deep Space Nine. Okay, this
this is like the green zone after the war. Yeah, so there's a situation that's
still problems between Cardassians and Bajorans.
Yeah,
you know the commander there, he's kind of being ailed as the emissary Cisco.
So they've already set
stuff like that.
It's already rich with possibilities.
Then in Voyager the same.
Yeah,
like by episode 9 you've met several key people, and
but also
the original plot is like
the scenario is good. You know, they were going home and then they're gone off course.
Exactly,
so
it's exactly. Already so interesting going back
in terms
home, exactly.
of yeah. That's the exactly. yeah. This one, fair enough. It's the beginning. It's the alpha, right? We're at the beginning of everything, so they haven't really set up. They're not in a rich, juicy situation from the get go. It's kind of like, let's go and explore. So yeah, I understand in terms of
the situation is only exploring.
Yeah, at the moment it's just but for example, let's say
like there is no plot right now.
Right now, yeah. So we really need to get a big bad. Yeah. So for example, let's say that when they found out that this the Malarians were mining this isotope, the viridium isotope, to make these weapons. Imagine that was a Suliban instead of these guys, or underneath their skin, it was the Suliban, or it was the Klingons, or something. Yeah. I'm not okay. Maybe later on, this does actually turn out to be. We still haven't got further.
We don't know.
But imagine at this point, that would have been a real nice little shoot.
Because it starts to ties in to something you've seen in the past.
Something that we've seen before.
And it reads as a step forward into the plot.
Right.
Exactly.
But and it shows you what are they mining for? Why are they building these weapons? Yeah. Like, what are they planning? So it kind of puts all these questions. Again, maybe this happens later, but imagine it was the instead of this race, the Malarians, it was the Sulubans, Klingons, Vulcans, even something that makes
that keeps
us think,
the Watcher going, and
right,
you know,
yeah.
Because the thing is,
gives us more questions.
Realistically, on what we base of what the episode that we watched so far, if we were not doing this podcast, I would have copped out already.
Well, that's the reason why we're doing Rise and Shine. Yes, the whole point
again,
of this podcast
for the
was
because time. If it wasn't because of the podcast, I would have told you, "Oh, I'm bored of this thing. Let's go." Even if certain episodes have been okay, they've been, you know, nice to watch, but the overall plot is not grabbing me yet. And for 40 minutes, how long are the episodes? About 40 minutes of each of them. For a 40 minutes episode times 9, that's a lot of footage.
Yeah, we've already put in a few hours and still haven't. Yeah. You're right, yeah. And by the way, guys, if you don't know, that's the whole reason why we started Riser and Shy was because we could never make it past... I mean, now we have. We couldn't get past a third episode of Enterprise because we just weren't grabbed by it. And that's the reason why we started this, because we really wanted to see it, because we'd had so much fun. You know, back to back, we'd watched Next Gen and Deep Space Nine and Voyager, and they were really enjoyable in different ways. And we thought Enterprise, we were so excited. And by the third episode, we were like, this thing is terrible.
Rubbish.
So, but we've always felt bad and guilty about not watching it, because it's always just sitting there looking at us, you know, asking us, pleading with us to watch it. And eventually, we had to start a podcast to keep us honest and to force us to watch it. And we've had one good, and it's not even a great episode compared to some other episodes.
One out of 10.
But one out of almost 10 episodes, we've had one that's half decent, you know. So, yeah, we need something to happen right now. We need to pick up, whether it's, even if it's a Mission of the Week episode, give us something. But the next few episodes have to set up a larger storyline, a larger plot that involves something, longer form storytelling, something that involves us, that's going to keep us there for the next season and the next season.
As well, because this is being produced after the Space Nine, like not in the storyline, but in the reality.
In terms of the actual production.
Right?
So they've had all this. So they kind of know what
they need to do.
Yeah.
Right? They've had Next Gen and the Space Nine, they both had overall storylines. So it's not like they don't know.
Again, what's interesting, when we were speaking in our first episodes, we were saying that because Voyager was, when Voyager finished, Enterprise launched not long after, right? So a lot of people said that didn't help, because with this series kind of saturation, and with this series starting, you know, before everything happened in regards to the Trek timeline, having people to kind of almost start again in that sense, it was, and
it's almost like regurgitating information.
It's showing us a lot of things that we, because even if you just watched Voyager, that's 7 years, right? So it's not like you're not used to the formula of Star Trek. So this series had to work double, triple hard. Not only was it starting pretty much after Voyager had come off the air, it's a series that starts before Voyager, before Deep Space Nine, before Star Trek, Next Generation, before the original series. So we understandably, the episodes can't be too far ahead in that respect, in terms of what's going to happen and what the characters know. But because the fans had seen so much Star Trek at this point, it's taking way too long to get started, right?
Yeah.
Now, if you're new to Star Trek, maybe you enjoy it a bit more. I imagine, because it's new to you, so what's new to the characters
maybe
is new to
you. Maybe you should watch this first.
Maybe.
But then it puts you off watching the...
What's
the
new to you will be new to the characters, so you're kind of in time with them, in line with them, and discovering things with them at the same sort of time. But if you're coming from Star Trek, even if you're coming from one series that you've watched, even if you're coming from the movie, you've already got a prime sort of...
understanding.
A primer already, an understanding of the mechanics, of the flow, of the formula, of Starfleet, how they operate, how they go about things. So these episodes, for us at least, were just waiting for something to happen now.
That's why I think people get bored of even the newer things like Discovery, because it seems to be such a trend in the recent years to have all these prequels for everything, you know. And I'm like, I don't think prequels are needed unless there is some really big question marks that were never answered in a franchise or a movie franchise.
There's some really incredible story that they can tell. Because a lot of the time, you hear about the past or a prequel era, let's say that has been made through the original characters on the screen. And it's more interesting because your imagination fills in what it could have been like.
Exactly.
When you hear the stories of this person or that person or these adventures on this planet, your mind just makes...
Fills the gap,
right? And you just listen to the characters tell that story. So that's far more interesting than actually seeing it. So unless you've got a really interesting story to tell or an interesting way of showing us what happened, then, prequels aren't really always the best way to go.
Yeah.
But I think most people don't like Discovery and Picard is because they're not very Star Trek.
Yeah, no, definitely. Besides that, but I was having a conversation with some other people, and also this point came up that people are tired of the general consensus, like, we're tired of prequels and just explaining things for the sake of explaining. Like you said, like, our imagination fills the gap. And the whole point of Star Trek is to go where no man has gone before. So
lots of going back.
Yeah, it's a implied go forward, not go back with productions. And, you know, if anything, the prequel that I would really care to see is, how the heck is Starfleet? How was he born on Earth? What happened on Earth? We never get to see that.
How did our civilization
How did we reach the point of not needing money anymore, eradicating illnesses, eradicating famine? You know, that is the prequel I want to see.
That'd be quite interesting. How Starfleet came about?
Exactly.
You know, What was the catalyst that caused, you know, enough is enough? We heard it was a major war, right? There was a major war on Earth that eventually took a lot of people out. And after that aftermath, we realized this was ridiculous and we had to change. But that would be really
interesting. That would be really good. Yeah. I'm not interested about, you know, this nonsense.
Especially with the world we live in today, with so much happening going on in terms of wars, pandemics, social injustice.
Yeah.
Financial and economic inequality, etc., etc.
Maybe a couple of episodes ago, we were talking how, I think it was in the podcast, or might have been a conversation between you and I, but we were saying, like, how we always get to see this kind of post-apocalyptic, when in movies or TV series, we always get to see this post-apocalyptic situation where actually we're going back to our tribal and
I think
it was in the last episode
about this,
right?
Yeah, we spoke about this.
So
how we sort of regress into these more sort after some sort of dystopian disaster extinction level event, we kind of regress back to our more tribal and primal sort of way of life.
So this is what I'm saying. It's very interesting because from one side we see this regression, but yet by Star Trek storyline instead is the opposite, where a catalyst event happened and instead society got better, didn't go back to tribal days or to regressing. So that is the prequel I want to see. I don't care about other stories. However, I mean, we have to say though that for things like Discovery, I got reminded the other day, because maybe we should just watch the last, before the next season comes up, we should watch the last couple of episodes from the previous series. But previous season, sorry. Remember, they went into the future in the last one.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So maybe now we're going to start to see some interesting things.
I like Discovery. I know a lot of people aren't the biggest fans, but I really like it. I really do. I'm looking forward to actually that new season. So we have to watch a couple of the last episodes.
Just to catch up.
Just
a
reminder. Or watch
a
YouTube.
A year or something.
YouTube always have those good recaps someone's put together. That'd be interesting to watch. It's possible, let us know as well, by the way, if what we're talking about in regards to what happened that caused Earth to go into this war, things to change, creating Starfleet, going into space, if it's something, maybe there's some sort of IP that's in a book or a comic that we haven't seen.
I remember there was
let us
an
know,
episode.
Because that'd be interesting to kind of read about that, and if that would be, you know, a good idea for a series.
I think it was a Voyager episode. There was a pretty sure it was Voyager that they got they time traveled and they came to the sort of 21st century like our century, the current century, and the and basically Earth was, they went inside like a camp or something. Do you remember? It was somewhere like, it looked like New York or something.
Yeah,
it looked like all burned down, and so it was, again, it was kind of pre new world, pre Starfleet,
New San Francisco
world. So obviously there was you see, that for me is the big mystery of Star Trek, this gap of time, and that's what I'd like to see on prequels.
That'll be, if again, if there's something that we should read that you guys think we should read, that will fill in these little gaps. Mm. Or what do you guys think, you know, if it's something, would that be an interesting series that you'd be interested in seeing?
Maybe you can write it.
Yeah, maybe. that would be cool, yeah. But yeah, you're right. At the moment, we are spinning our wheels, so let's hope that something very exciting, some big hook is going to get us on the, you know, get us to buy it so we can hang around for the, I mean, we will hang around. We've committed ourselves to watching the entire thing, but yeah, we desperately need something now, really, yeah, to kind of reel us in. We want to buy it, we want to hook, but at the moment, it's not quite there yet.
Yeah.
Not yet. Okay, well, that's our podcast for today. It was okay, yeah. 2 pips for me, 3 pips for you.
Let's make a pims.
Pims o'clock.
Pims o'clock.
It was okay. Yeah, it was okay. It wasn't too bad. But we hope we were okay. We hope we will make it a little bit more enjoyable. Thank you for listening.
Yes.
And we really enjoy having you here. And
appreciate you guys.
Putting up with us and our sort of amateur little thing. We promise you it's going to get a little bit better. We're really sort of got
We're literally camping, guys. We're stranded.
We're stranded. We're in lockdown. Yeah. We've got a very lo-fi setup. So, yeah. Apologies for
the last
few episodes have been a little bit all over the place.
Go back home.
In terms of the tech, but yeah, once we're settled, we will, you know, set up everything a bit better and the sound quality improve for sure. So we really appreciate you listening in and sticking with us,
yes,
and being with us from the beginning. We'll laugh about this in the future and how terrible this sounds. But yeah, thank you for sticking with us. Listen to us ramble on. If you do like listening to us and you enjoy it and you want to hear some more, don't forget you can find all of our previous episodes over at anchor.fm, Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Google, all the usual spots. And Michaela,
and if you want to leave a like, comment, share with your friends, or just say hello, you can find us at Riser and Shine on Facebook, or you can send an email to riserandshinepodcast@gmail.com.
Join us in next week where we'll be discussing Series 1, Episode 10 of Enterprise, and it's called Fortunate Son. Apparently in this episode, the Enterprise crew are sent to help a freighter, the Fortunate, which is under attack. However, all is not what it seems when they arrive. Interesting. So, is this the episode that gives us the hook?
I truly hope so.
That we're looking for? I hope so. But otherwise, that's it. This is Rise and Shine. I've been Jason and...
Michaela.
We've detected a surge of unusual energy a couple of light years from here, so I think we're going to go and check that out.
Yeah, let's go.
Helm, set a course. Give me warp 2. Punch it.